have to put up with when I chair about it once every 5 or 10 years. After watching the Kansas City Royals get beat last night 12-1 with my wife, Mary, I started channel surfing. And I landed on a channel. I watched it for a couple of minutes and realized it was an infomercial for male enhancement. So I continued surfing, and I found a fishing program. Mary looked at me and said, "Why don't you go back to the infomercial? You already know how to fish." With that, let's stand for the best, or for the best. Let's leave.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Notification of the Open Meeting Act, a copy of the Open Meeting Act, Nebraska Revised Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall in the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I'd like to announce the procedure that we will be using for the meeting with respect to each agenda item. The directors will hear the subcommittee chairman's report with their proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given an opportunity to address the board. And lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. All questions and comments will be addressed to the chair. We ask the public not to interrupt the directors during the discussion. Thank you. With that, roll call.
Bradley.
Here.
Fred Conley.
Here.
John Conley.
Here.
Grunwald.
Here.
Gaff.
Here.
Leahy. Thompson.
Here.
Weeks.
Here.
And Chairperson
Tyson. Yes. Here. We have excused absences from Director Klug and Fowler, and Director Leahy has contacted us moments ago saying he'll be 30 minutes late. Motion for adoption of the consent agenda?
So moved.
We need adoption agenda.
For a regular agenda. I move adoption agenda item 4.
Thank you.
Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Teaser, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'd like to make a comment on the minutes, and I don't know if I will be allowed that if those are included in the consent.
I will allow you a normal 30 minutes. Go ahead.
Perfect.
Go ahead at this point.
That's the next agenda item.
Yeah, we're on the regular.
We're on the regular.
We're on the four now, regular.
Okay. Sorry. Okay.
Fred
Conley.
Hi.
John Conley.
Yes.
Ron Wall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Austin.
Yes.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Yes. A proof of publication, I have that before me.
No.
What's that?
Five. I'm not five person.
Yeah. Now we go to adoption of the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
No.
No discussion.
My turn.
Yep. Yes,
thank you. Sean Malotz, 10404 North 132nd Street. And I would like to make a few comments on motion 3 that's within this consent agenda regarding the bond refinancing. While I am adamantly opposed to the use and issuance of bonds by this NRD, I do appreciate this board's foresight to refinance the 2013 bonds, thereby reducing the future property tax commitments. With that being said, I have a few questions and comments with respect to the 2017 issue. And I've provided everybody a copy of what I'm speaking on, as well as two exhibits. Exhibit one is the April 13th board minutes. And within that, the motion 3 on pages 3 and 4 addresses the call resolutions that calls for $12,760,000 on the 2013 bonds, where the refunding resolution lists the outstanding principal amount at $13,395,000, and there's a variance of $635,000 between the two. Also on the 2013 bonds, on pages 5 and 6, the call resolution calls for the redemption of $39,200,000. But there's a difference of $830,000 on the 2013 bonds. So between the two resolutions, there's over $1,400,000 variance. And my question to the board and staff, will these discrepancies between these two resolutions taint the transaction and null the resolutions? Then on, I'm going to go ahead and do my, so you can get through the three minutes. On the 2017 bonds, which is Exhibit B, they were issued for $43,530,000. On Tuesday, I requested a copy of this document from General Manager Winkler and never received this document. I actually found it online. So it is out there for the directors if they want to have see a copy.
We just got a copy this afternoon.
Now on page one, it lists the $43,530,000. And then it goes on to go over the interest rates on all the bonds that are being issued, and they vary from 3% to 5%. And I want to bring everybody's attention to the fact that in the resolution, the maximum required interest rate was 4. Now, I also want to point out that on page, there's an exhibit, and I believe it's the last page, that goes over how this, what's left in outstanding principal. And according to A5, there it remains $8.4 million of Series 2013 bonds and $830,000 of the Series 2013B bonds. And this is, again, inconsistent with the board resolutions on April 13th. I'm concerned that the dollar amount of the issuance of $43,530,000 differs significantly than the bond call resolution of $51,960,000 by $8.4 million and the board refunding resolution of $53,425,000 differs by $9,895,000. I guess as a citizen, I'm concerned that these material differences could also taint the resolutions and thereby negate the transaction. It's evident that the dollars are inconsistent throughout these various documents. The total refinance bonds are less than board approved. Further, it's not disclosed whether the true interest costs are less than the 4% per annum, the not-to-exceed rate by the board resolution. I'd welcome discussion from this board and staff regarding these discrepancies. As a taxpayer, I ask for transparency to provide a clear understanding of this issue. I respectfully request a copy of my testimony and attachments be included with the recorded written minutes of this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
The resolution that's passed in April, of course, it's always, as part of that resolution, it's always that as subject to changes deemed necessary by general manager or legal counsel. Baird Home is the district's legal counsel when it comes to bonding. They approved everything. Standard & Poor's approved everything. D.A. Davidson approved everything. So what we'll do is we'll send this to Baird Home, and they can spend the money going through this and providing an answer that will answer your questions. Of course, they're going to be different. Instead of a 4.5% rate, we thought the maximum was 4, but when it went to market, it was actually 3.5. So we've actually got a better interest rate. So instead of $1 million to $2 million, we save $2.7 million.
Where does it say the 3.5% rate? Is that just what's calculated?
That's what the final market sale was. So the final resolution or the final documents that are now available public information, of course, are going to differ from the resolution that was passed. And the reason we did that is because we could not wait for this board to act when it actually went to sale because the market could have changed and then we would have lost those savings. So we'll send this to D.A. Davidson. We'll send it to Baird Home. They will give a very succinct response to this question. So we can't do that right now because I don't have the bond expertise to say why are they different. But D.A. Davidson and Baird Home does. And so we will send this to them for an answer.
I guess my question would be why did you not refinance the entire amount as the board called for the 2013 bonds?
That will have to be answered by D.A. Davidson and Baird Home.
They didn't tell you?
They conducted the transaction. So there may be factors of payments this year that weren't factored in or cost or anything. So let's let them give you a very succinct answer, and this board, it's very open, very transparent. Anybody can go to the website to look at the documents. Again, you had a rating agency that looked at this. You had Baird Home, who basically wrote 99% of the bonding statutes in the entire state of Nebraska, review this and approve this. And then you have the marketing, Dave Davidson, review and approve. So, again, we'll let them give the full answer to your questions. They are the experts, and that's why we hired them.
Okay, why don't we move on?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on.
You have to take a vote.
Yeah, we're on the consent agenda. We have a motion that's been seconded. Roll call.
John Conley.
Yes.
Brunwald.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Keith.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Brett Thompson.
Aye.
And Shepard.
Yes. As I said earlier, we do have proof of publication before me. And with that, agency reports. Natural Resource Conservation Service report, Neil Jensen, District Conservation. Good evening, Neil.
Good evening. Sorry, no joke. Kind of real hot off the presses today. They've already started reorganizing USDA a little bit, and from the standpoint, Sonny Perdue, our Secretary of Ag, announced that they're moving NRCS, Farm Service Agency, and the Risk Management Agency under one undersecretary. What does that mean to us? Right now, all I know is our chain of command, as we go up to the secretary, has changed. For us, it's, you know, out here in the field, it's business as usual. They passed a continuous resolution till the end of September for us, so we're funded and at the full rate of what 2016 was, our budget. So we're just going to continue on this year and keep working. Part of this realignment, they did mention that there was no reduction in USDA workforce as part of that reorganization plan. But like I say, yeah, this is probably the first we're seeing of some of the things that the new Ag Secretary is enacting. There were some other undersecretaries that they had created too, but I'm not going to go discuss those. You can get online and read about that yourself. I'd like to mention that we hired a pathway student trainee. He'll be with us this summer, Chris Smith, and he'll be working out of the Blair Field office. He starts Monday of next week. The next thing is an update on our conservation compliance reviews. We've been doing compliance reviews since 1985 when that law was first enacted, where producers had to follow a conservation plan in order to get USDA benefits. Recently, the Office Inspector General had done an audit of our procedures, and they had made some recommendations for some changes. So what does that do to our producers? Basically, what it's going to do is in order for a participant to be eligible, they're probably going to have to do a few more practices on their fields if they have ephemeral erosion. And if you would scroll down to the pictures, there you go. That's kind of what we're talking about when we talk about some ephemeral erosion, where we've got some concentrated flow erosion. It's always been the requirement that if you sodbust ground, that you've had to control this, or if you were causing off-site damage, that you had to control this erosion. Part of the recommendation on OIG is consistency across states is that now we have to control that even if there is no off-site damage. And We are going to give producers time to comply with this. They'll have a couple of 3 years. Some of the options that it mentions here, you know, it could be no-till, cover crops, grassed waterway, terraces. We'll certainly work with producers to find out what works for them and trying to implement these practices. The other thing that I guess our state has done is they put aside some of our EQIP dollars to help participants fund some of the practices that they want to be looking at. So as we do compliance reviews here this next month, if we find some of these issues, we'll probably be signing up some of these applicants to do either grassed waterways or terraces and give them time to get it installed. And I think that's it. Any questions?
Neil, how are you doing staff-wise? You had a number of vacancies. Are you up to speed now on staff?
Well, before the hiring freeze, we had two extra staff persons that were in the mix that we were going to hire. One was a soil conservationist for the Blair office. The intent for that is a lot of our staff across the state probably within 5 years could retire. And so they were trying to hire some new staff to get them trained before we lose all that experience so that we'd have some staff available to come up through the system. The other one was a compliance review person to go out and do HEL and wetland determinations. Those two right now, even though they've lifted the hiring freeze, they still have to justify up through the system before they're going to allow us to hire any more staff. And I know probably a bigger thing is our compliance specialist working on wetlands. We could really use that, but I just don't know when and if that's going to happen. One thing that we are looking at, because our technician had retired in Walt Hill, we are looking at putting on a contract employee. We've had it announced here for 2 weeks now. Tomorrow's kind of the deadline, and we're going to take a look at we've got four applicants so far, and we're going to take a look at those applicants and hopefully make a decision to put them on as a contract employee.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Neil. Moving on with item B, Nebraska Association of Resources Districts. Director Rich Teeth. Oh, we're going. The NARD will be having their annual tour June 12th and 13th out of Norfolk. And they'll be touring the Pathfield, the Lewis and Clark, and the Upper or Lower Elkhorn. And so if any of the directors want to go on that tour, I think we still have some time. Steve, Jean. Jean, do we have anybody signed up yet?
We have.
I will be at the meeting, but I have already obligated myself elsewhere, so I won't be on the tour. But I really encourage the new directors, particularly if they have the time to take the tour. It's very educational, and you'll learn a lot about what we do in the Pathfield in the northern part of the district, and you'll learn a lot about the other NRDs. It's and you eat like a king. It's great. Not that I eat. That concludes my report. Moving on. Legislative report, Hush Blackwell. Good evening, Steve.
Good evening. Steve Gross, Hush Blackwell. I'm going to hand out. Today was the 81st day of the 90-day legislative session, so they are starting to wind down. And in fact, the speaker announced that they might even adjourn early this year. I'm not going to go through this entire report, but I am going to go through quite a bit of it. There's a lot going on right now. I'm going to focus on LB 327, which, of course, was the appropriation bill to fund expenses of the state government for the entire biennium. You may have read about this, but there's very lengthy debate on this. And on Tuesday, May 9th, the senators passed LB 327 on final reading. There were some amendments by the Appropriations Committee, some further adjustments and transfers were adopted to address what was projected to be another $55 million revenue shortfall. Governor Ricketts had proposed to take about $5 million per year out of the Water Sustainability Fund. However, the Appropriations Committee came up with another solution and offered amendments to address the revenue adjustment adopted on select file, including a one-time reduction of $1.2 million in the Water Sustainability Fund in FY19, taking the transfer in that year down to $9.47 million. Transfers in the fiscal years 19 and 20 biennium would then return to $10.6 million per year. The bottom line here is that there will not be any reduction in terms of the funding of grants that have already been awarded, and so that's great news for the district. Your government affairs team worked very hard to ensure that result, and just to continue to educate members about the work of the NRD. Just last week, John Winkler and Tim Gay met with Senators Quick, McAllister, Kalowski, Albright, Geist, Bosselman, Waltz, and Hughes. I also know that Tim was in touch with the governor's office even today, trying to urge that there would not be any line item vetoes on the Water Sustainability Fund, and we are hopeful that there will not be any. So subject to any potential line item vetoes and any special session yet to come in the future, it looks like we will be fully funded for the grants that were awarded under the Water Sustainability Fund. Some other important aspects of that same appropriations bill, because of the huge shortfall in funding and tax revenue coming into the state, annual funding for the riparian vegetation management program was reduced by $500,000 to a level of $475,000. The annual, there was also an annual reduction of $926,480 for research and data collection functions of the Department of Natural Resources. That affects the integrated water management and interstate water agreements functions. There was a $200,000 annual funding reduction for stream gauging, information technology, and other equipment to the Department of Natural Resources, and $436,669 annual reduction in funding for the Soil and Water Conservation Fund. Those funds are allocated to the NRDs to provide cost share to landowners to implement conservation programs and practices. Another bill I want to talk about is LB 98. It doesn't directly affect this district, but I think you would probably want to be aware of it. That was the bill to extend the 3-cent levy authority for natural resources districts in over-appropriated districts. And that was introduced by Senator Kurt Friesen. He proposed to extend that 3-cent authority through FY25-26 to continue current and future programs to improve water supplies. On May 2nd, following an extended debate, he filed a cloture motion, and it failed by a vote of 31-9. Fell two votes short. So that bill is dead for this year. It is still on the it will carry over to next session, however. Then I wanted to skip down to LB 151. This probably has more impact on the general manager and staff, but it changes requirements for audits and the duties of the state auditor that will affect the district in the ways that are specified there. Then on turning to the last page, LB 182, that bill affected Nebraska Department of Environmental Quality, its powers and duties under the Drinking Water Statute Revolving Fund. The legislature passed that bill, sponsored by Senator Dan Hughes, on April 24th on a 49-0 vote. The governor signed the bill into law on April 27th. It amends the Nebraska Drinking Water State Revolving Fund Act to allow for public water supply systems that serve populations of 10,000 or less and are operated by political subdivisions to be eligible for low-interest loans and grants for development, treatment, and distribution of drinking water supplies. However, there are 15 systems operated by the NRDs, but only the Lower Niobrara NRD has a population of less than 10,000. And finally, LB 432 has some changes to the Nebraska Budget Act. Again, this is more of a technical change, sponsored by Senator Erdman. Retains the authority of political subdivisions to make allowance for delinquent taxes as specified in their biannual budget statement, but qualifies it as only existing when the prime rate established by the Federal Reserve is 10% or more. And I want to give credit to Ron Sedlacek, who actually prepared that report. This is just another update of our bill tracking. This was prepared by Tim Gage. And I won't go through that, but I'll just go ahead and hand that out for your reference. I did want to... discuss very briefly, if I can find it, LB 97 by Senator Crawford. I thought you might be interested. That was the Riverfront Development District Act. It was approved by the governor on May 9th, just very recently. The purpose of the Riverfront Development District Act is to provide a means by which cities in the state may effectively fund, manage, promote, and develop riverfronts within their corporate limits. And both the Missouri River and the Elkhorn River are specified in the bill as rivers that are covered under this bill. They do have, these authorities have the power to issue bonds, and it's a very lengthy bill, but I know that Norfolk was very interested in that, and there could be other smaller cities that were interested in. I don't know that this will affect Omaha, but it is new authority for that type of riverfront development. I want to briefly go over the interim studies. They came out just this week, and there's tons of them. But I'm just going to talk about nine of them that may be of interest to members of the board. LR number four, sponsored by Senator Blood, is an interim study to explore if the development of a more comprehensive water quality study is needed. It's a fairly broad topic. LR 126 is an interim study sponsored by Senator Hughes to examine the Nebraska Cooperative Republican Plat Enhancement Project. LR 132 by Senator Moronti is an interim study to examine elections conducted by and on behalf of political subdivisions. That, of course, would include NRDs. LR 159 by Senator Hughes is an interim study to examine issues under the jurisdiction of the Natural Resources Committee. That's one of these catch-all interim studies. So basically anything they want to study, they've got a vehicle for it in LR 159. LR 171 by Senator Brewer is an interim study to examine ways to minimize conflict in the availability and utilization of bee forage resources. So pretty specific. LR 197 by Senator Pansy and Brooks is an interim study to examine issues surrounding the utilization of wood generated by the emerald ash borer infestation, because they're expecting quite a few trees to be cut down. And just a few more here. LR 237 by Senator Groney is an interim study to examine all aspects of and the history of the Nebraska Cooperative Republican Plat Enhancement Project. So that's two on that topic. LR 239 by Senator Kulaski, interim study to examine issues related to solar energy development in Nebraska. And the last one, LR 245 by Senator Brewer, is an interim study to examine issues raised by LB 504 related to placing a moratorium on industrial development of wind energy projects. So just, you know, we may be talking more about those, but just to kind of give you an idea of what is out there. So the deadline has passed on those, so that's the final list. Just one other thing, maybe some general interest. Legislative Resolution 246 was passed just today on today's agenda. The legislature recognizes the great sacrifice and contributions of Chief Standing Bear and Dr. Susan LaFleche Picotte. And the legislature joins Governor Ricketts in declaring May 12th, that's tomorrow, to be Chief Standing Bear Day in Nebraska. So that's hot off the press. Any questions about the Water Sustainability Fund or other bills?
I, for one, am not particularly happy about losing that riparian vegetation management. We originally started off with $1 million, and they cut it down to $500,000. Mm-hmm. Now they're taking another 25. I still have on that committee. In fact, we're going to host a meeting of the task force at my Sokol camp where I live, and we're hoping to have the governor there this late summer, early fall, and actually take him out and show him the river. Mm-hmm. And why we're concerned about what's happening to it, but it is what it is. Director, General.
Go ahead, Director Bradley.
Thank you. Real quick, subcap on the, was it an LR, interim study on political subdivisions? What was that one again, please?
On elections conducted by political subdivisions.
Okay.
And I don't know what the intent is there. They may be looking at some efficiencies. They may be looking at changes in the ballots. I don't know. The NRD elections are, of course, conducted by the county officials in each county. In Douglas and Sarpy, it's by the election commissioners. And in the northern counties, by the county clerk's offices.
The I think Steve was a little modest on the Water Sustainability Fund and their role and our role in that. I was contacted by Ron and Tim. I think it was in the evening, sometime 8, 9 o'clock, that they indicated that after the state forecasting board met, they had another $55 million to fill, and that the Water Sustainability Fund was a target. And so they got word of that before it was even public knowledge. And they contacted me, and we set up those meetings that Steve mentioned, but we also met with another 15 or 20 state senators that we pulled off the floor, and those were Appropriations Committee members. And so we inserted ourselves in the process very early. And our main goal was to protect that $6.7 million that's been allocated because it was all up for grabs. And when you have a big shortfall like that, they start shaking the couch cushions looking for any dime or nickel or quarter that will fall out. And so we were obviously expressing our not only selfishly for the Papio, but also just for the general fund. But if we did not have or hear that when we did, it could have been a point where it was already decided and going through the process, and then we would be trying to fight to get it changed. And we actually were able to insert ourselves before it actually was even voted in the Appropriations Committee. And that's a testament to these guys being there and working with the administration and their ears and eyes in that rotunda all the time, because there's no way that I could insert myself and be there that whole time and hear that. Even with our, some of the senators that are favorable to the districts, they're not going to be able to remember to reach out to everybody that could be affected by a budget bill. So hats off to Tim and Ron, and then obviously Steve, who helps coordinate that, because by the time we would have found out, it would have been too late. So I appreciate it.
Are there comments from directors?
I don't know if you can answer this, but I'm looking at LR 246 about Chief Standing Bear and Dr. Fresh Picot. Mm-hmm. And how great both these individuals did to Nebraska. But the last thing says to join Governor Record in declaring May 12th, 2007 to be Chief Standing Bear Day in Nebraska. When's Susan LaFleche Picot's day? I mean, why would they go through and highlight her achievements and then forget about calling her day?
I think actually she was kind of added to Chief Standing Bear's resolution. It does mention, I should maybe, let's see. Well, he says, whereas citizens of the great state of Nebraska will gather for the annual Chief Standing Bear commemoration celebration to remember and reflect upon the contributions of Chief Standing Bear. So there are apparently some celebrations tomorrow.
Anything else?
She'll have her day pretty soon.
Yeah.
You read a lot of things off a different sheet that I didn't have that I found very interesting.
Oh, that would be the interim resolutions. I'll give you my copy.
Wow.
Yeah. And this is available on their the legislature's website.
I'm
happy to.
Thank you, sir.
I should mention that resolution was introduced by Senator Brewer, who is a Native American from the Sand Hills of Nebraska.
Thank you very much. Moving on to item D, Silverstone Group Market Analysis results presentation, Ashley Tamala and Silverstone Group and Jean Tate. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening. I hope to be as entertaining as you, Rich. So this is for the new directors. This is Ashley Tamala with Silverstone Group. She has been working with the district for the past several years, helping us to prepare the annual pay administration program, and every 4 years to conduct the market analysis for the jobs that the district has filled. And the purpose is to ensure that each individual job is being paid fair market value for the job that we're expecting our employees to complete. Tonight is just an update. We'll be bringing this back to the subcommittee and the board in October for action. And depending on what the board does, we will incorporate those changes into the December's pay administration program. So at this point in time, I'll turn it over to Ashley.
Thanks, Jean. Like I said, I hope to be brief. The purpose of my discussion is just to provide a very high-level overview of the compensation project and just to give you an update of the current status of the project. So with the compensation study, the first steps that we go through with a project of this nature is to review all of the job descriptions for the jobs that exist here at the district. So Jean and I worked together to review all of that information, so that way Silverstone Group had a good, thorough understanding of the work that's being performed here. After we went through that process, then we talked through really what is the labor market for these positions. And so essentially when you define the labor market for the purpose of a compensation study, generally you do that by looking at these four factors listed here. So geography, industry, and then company to size defined by revenue and number of employees. So what we did was we looked at, again, all the job descriptions and the labor market for these positions and said, okay, based on our understanding of those jobs and the labor market, given the extensive resources that Silverstone Group has access to, which of those published salary survey sources would contain the data for those relevant jobs, given the Omaha industry, or the Omaha all industries labor market. So what we did was we turned to those resources and we gathered all of the compensation data. So we compiled information from the seven resources listed here. And it's important to note that we did gather data from multiple survey sources to provide the district with a thorough, comprehensive understanding of really what is the going pay rate for the positions here at Papio NRD. After we compiled all of the market data, the next step was really to see how does that compare to the current pay structure for these positions and to determine does the pay structure need updated, and if so, what might those updates look like. So here you can see what the current pay structure looks like. So this is what is in place right now. You'll want to note that the current pay structure consists of 15 pay grades. So each job at the district is assigned to one of these pay grades, and then you can see each pay grade has an associated pay grade minimum, midpoint, and maximum. So what that indicates is that, for example, a job in pay grade 3 would be paid somewhere between the $37,013, which is the pay grade minimum, up to the maximum of $55,519. It's important to note on the current pay structure that the pay grade midpoints, so the middle of the range, that pay grade midpoint from one pay grade to the next increases by the increment that's listed in the pay grade increment column. So for example, moving from the midpoint of pay grade 1 to pay grade 2, that's an increase of 27%. So the current pay structure has the pay grade increments are wider at the bottom, are larger at the bottom, and then get smaller at the top. That's a little bit different from what we typically see with a pay structure. Generally, the pay grade increments increase by a consistent percentage so that it's uniform. Otherwise, if the pay grade increments are different, they tend to be larger at the top versus the bottom. So that was one reason that I thought it would be important to review the current pay structure and, like I said, see if there were any suggested changes to help ensure that the district is providing pay that is competitive with market rates. So what we did after we reviewed the current pay structure was we looked at what might an updated or a suggested pay structure look like that has more of a consistent pay grade increment. So again, just to provide more uniformity to the structure. And so what Silverstone Group did was we took the lowest market midpoint and used that as the starting point to build this pay structure. So that number is the midpoint of pay grade one. And what we did was we built this structure in an upwards fashion, increasing each midpoint by 10%. So again, that's consistent all the way up to the very top of this pay structure. And here you'll see that we have 23 pay grades compared to what's currently in place at 15. So the reason that there are more pay grades with this suggested approach is that we have a smaller increment at the bottom. So it takes a little bit more, it takes more pay grades to fully reach the top of that market rate, which was for the general manager position. So after we developed a suggested pay structure that's, again, very uniform and consistent in how the increments were created and how wide the range spreads are, we went to work on assigning jobs to each pay grade. So I apologize. I know these numbers are very small, so I'll walk you through the process. So what we did was we looked at each job's market rate. And so the market rates are rank ordered from high to low. So that's the first column of numbers that you see. And in order to determine which pay grade each of these jobs would fall in the new structure, we did all these fun little mathematical calculations to say essentially which pay grade midpoint is that market rate closest to. So those numbers that are highlighted in gray, that's the smallest absolute value for each job in comparison to the pay grade midpoint. So really the bottom line for how we assign jobs to the pay structure is that it's a very objective process. It wasn't, arbitrary or subjective. It was very objective using these mathematical calculations. And then once we did have all of the jobs assigned to a pay grade, Gene, John, and I worked through reviewing that to make sure, does it make sense from an internal equity perspective and how the job's valued at the district here? So we went through that process. And then what we did was, again, I apologize, the numbers are small here, but this gives you a visual showing in gray each of the jobs are listed here in alphabetical order, and the gray bars, that is the suggested pay range for each job, and then the bars that are in blue, that's the current pay range for each job. And so if the district decides to move to this suggested pay structure, I think really what will happen is that for a majority of the jobs, it'll provide greater pay potential and help the jobs better align with the market rates. There are a few positions where the suggested range is a little bit below what the current rate is, but it doesn't have a large impact on current employee pay, which I'll get to here in a little bit. So right now, this chart is showing those comparisons, again, looking at the suggested pay range versus the current pay range, and this is showing at the job level. So then when we talk about really if the district decides to move to the suggested pay structure, what does that mean in relation to current employee pay? We actually don't usually see this too often, but the pay structure aligns very well with current pay. The difference to get current employees into the suggested pay range for their job, with the exception if we're excluding the general manager, that amount is only $1,457 to get all employees to at least the pay range minimum for their job. So essentially, there are only two people whose current pay is below the suggested minimum. We do have 12 individuals that you can see whose pay is over the suggested pay range maximum, and the total dollar value that those 12 individuals are over the maximums is listed there at $108,285. So again, the bottom line is that, in general, employee pay does align fairly well with this suggested pay structure. The reason that I believe we are seeing more individuals who are over the pay range maximum is due to the length of service increase policy that is currently in place at the district. So this policy allows individuals' pay to progress beyond their current pay grade given tenure. So just to try to walk you through an example to help you understand this and make it a little bit more concrete. So for example, the length of service increase policy, if we have a job that is in pay grade 3, once an employee reaches 7 years of service, their pay is then compared to pay grade 4. So their pay is increased by one pay grade at the 7 years of service mark. At 15 years of service, their pay is increased to two pay grades above the pay grade for their current job. And at 25 years, the pay is compared to the pay grade that is three pay grades above the current pay grade of their job. So really what this shows is that for a job in pay grade 3 with a maximum of $55,519, with the current policy in place, if an individual reaches 25 years of experience in that same position, their pay could actually become up to $26,000 above the market competitive range for their position. So again, I think that's why we're seeing those 12 individuals who have pay above the pay range, the suggested pay range maximum, is due to their tenure. I believe if I look at my notes here, I think there were only, of those 12 individuals, nine of the individuals are very highly tenured and would have, their pay would have been affected by this length of service policy that's currently in place. So just to give you a little bit more of an understanding of the current pay range potential and what that looks like in relation to employee tenure. The bottom line is that 63% of current employees have the potential to be paid above a market competitive range due to the length of service increase policy that's currently in place. So right now, 29% of employees would fall in that 25 plus years of service category. 12% of employees would fall in the 15 plus years of service category, and 23% of employees would fall within the 7 plus years of service category. So the suggestion, based on the market analysis that we conducted and looking at how the market rates compare to current positions and how current employee pay compares, the suggestion is to implement the suggested pay structure to ensure that the district is providing compensation rates that are in line with market. That way, you know, it'll help attract and retain employees if they feel that they are getting, if they do have the opportunity to be provided with a market competitive salary. And then the other suggestion is to consider the impact of the length of service increase policy and if it may make sense to potentially phase that out in the future given the financial impact it has on the district. And that's it. Questions?
Does anyone have any questions from the ladies? Commissioner Leahy.
Yeah, there's lots to unpack there. I wasn't quite understanding how the maximum of the current scale is broken with the length of service increase policy. I mean, when I hear the word maximum, I think words have meanings. So how does the maximum get increased over and above what their that example you put up, grade 3?
With this one here?
Yeah. So right there, pay range maximum is $55,519.
Like right.
I'm not sure how we're
so the
25 years they go to 81,000 because I see the word maximum on their pay grade range and I say that's it. They're capped out unless they get promoted to a position of pay grade 4.
Sure. So what this policy does is that once the employee reaches 7 years of service in that same position, then their pay is no longer compared to the pay grade 3 and that maximum. Their pay is now compared to the pay grade maximum of pay grade 4. So by reaching that year of service category, their pay is automatically compared to the next pay grade at 7 years. At 15 years, then it's automatically compared to the pay grade above that. And at 25 years, then it's compared to the pay grade, the pay range three steps above. So the job does not have to change. It's a function of the tenure.
And if I can add, when individuals get their evaluation, they're at within a certain percentage of their midpoint. So what ends up happening is that when they move up to that next salary grade, the midpoint changes, which brings their salary down to a smaller percentage of that midpoint. And so most of the time, the impact is about 5.5%. It's not huge increases, but it gives them an opportunity to potentially grow. And like, and again, so then when you go to 15 years, it goes to what that midpoint and that percentage is figured in. So it figures into the percentage of increase that they get for performance based on our merit system of evaluation to move through that. So
yeah, that was sort of my next question. Those words, I mean, you said potential. It's a potential. It doesn't mean it's automatically happen when they hit 715.
Correct.
It's some kind of merit-based.
They need.
The managers are saying, yeah, I mean, they have the potential to do that, but.
Yes, they also need to have a meets performance expectations rating in order to be eligible for that years of service increase. It's not an automatic thing, but it does provide them with the potential to have higher pay if they are meeting expectations.
So, I mean, if it were to get really out of whack, I mean, there's accountability to the GM. The board has accountability to the GM to say, hey, why'd you do this? Why'd you run the operation this way? Then there's a couple slides where you evaluated 15 positions. Why not all 52 that we had?
All positions were evaluated. So are you referring to this one?
No, next slide.
They fit into those pay grades, no matter what they are.
So
there's 15 pay grades that fit those 52 positions in.
Well, then go forward. Next. There. So we were talking about 15 positions here.
This is looking at all positions, of all jobs, of all employees. 12 employees have pay over the suggested pay range maximum. Of all employees, 2 employees are under the suggested pay range minimum.
And then my last question is, so this is for information tonight. Are we going to be asked next board meeting?
We're going to bring it back in October for the board to go ahead and approve. And depending on what the board decides, that decision will be incorporated in the pay administration manual, which again will be voted on the board in December. We always bring the pay administration manual back to the board because there tends to be changes, you know, sometimes tweaks in evaluations by small amounts, just to stay competitive with the market.
A couple more questions. Go back a few slides to that one that had the 10% adjusted. Yeah, that. So, I mean, I've got my contacts in and goes to show you what those are worth. So is that 301,000? So, I mean, in theory, pay grade 23, we're breaking them out into 15 pay grades now to 23. So the GM could be paid 301,000 in theory if we were to adopt something like this. That's the potential.
Potentially.
That's the potential. Okay. And then two board meetings.
Given, and along those same lines, I think it's helpful to understand or to see visually on this chart, the suggested pay range chart, if we could scroll down, that the general manager position, again, the blue is the current pay range for the job, and the gray is the suggested range for the job. And so that's why you're seeing higher values in the suggested pay structure, because based on our review of the market data, the general manager position has the is farthest out of line with market.
Yeah, and, I mean, I got a lot more questions, but I'll interrupt for a while. And
yeah, I was just gonna say I'm not gonna cut you off, Director Conley.
This is an excellent presentation. It's enlightening that I've been on this board over 18 years. The first time I've heard that we had more than one increase. Understand the. They could go up in labor grade. That's been discussed in the past. I don't believe I've ever heard before that there's a possibility to go up 3 labor grades, as was outlined tonight. I want to compliment you for pointing that out.
How long has that policy been in place?
It's been in...
Since I've waited.
Yeah, ever since I've been here, there was that salary grade increase.
I don't think it's been brought that clearly to the board's attention before.
And I think the original reason it was implemented because of it's a small organization and there isn't much room for advancement. So I think it was the philosophy of rewarding loyalty and longevity, which we've kind of gone the different direction now and trying to reward performance. And so that's why it's becoming, I think, clearer an issue now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions? Director Conley.
I wanted to ask, what are your final recommendations on the length of service issue?
I'm sorry?
What was your recommendation on the length of service issue?
The length of service issue, I would consider, given the financial impact it has to the district, I would consider potentially phasing that policy out. There are a number of ways that you could go about doing that. You could consider maybe doing it over a 3-year period where the first year you eliminate the 25-year increase, the second year you could eliminate the 15-year increase, and the third year you could eliminate the 7-year increase. There are a lot of different ways you could go about doing it. I think it would be important to review current employee tenure to see if there are natural breaks or gaps that would make sense as far as timing. It would be unfortunate to have an individual think that their pay has the potential to change, you know, next month or in 6 months, and then really not have any heads up that this is happening. So I think a little bit of leeway would be, a little lead time would be nice, and to maybe phase this out over time rather than doing a hard stop if the district desires to eliminate it at all. Maybe that's not the case.
Will that be a recommendation down from the administration?
Well, I think that's what we need to sit down and work out with Ashley. And then also, I mean, we need to get some input and talk to the employees. But we'll have a recommendation on what to do in October. But, I mean, we just kind of throw these out there. We have to look again and make sure we're not negatively impacting someone that.
Right.
Inadvertently. So.
Director Leahy, one more time.
All right. 3 more quick questions. One more time. At the very first slide, you talked about the comparisons that you do across all industries.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way that you can compare within other government entities?
Government entities.
And just focus on that, because there's differences between private sector and,
sure,
you know, private sector mower per se versus a government mower that isn't just salary, but it's in benefits as well.
Right. The focus of the study was on compensation, so we focused mainly on that. But we did gather data from all industries, so that would encompass the government sector. And I think it's important to think about, you know, really where is the district trying to recruit individuals from? Where are you trying to be competitive? And so from that perspective, you know, generally you're not just trying to recruit people away from other government organizations. It's more of a broader labor market. So that's why we looked at the Omaha all industry labor market rather than just looking at government type entities.
Because we need to be competitive with corporate as well, because if we were going to lose somebody, we could lose them to someone else. So that's why we've included as many as what we did.
And I get that as this, you know, but we're only looking at compensation where you know, there's other reasons why people work for government over corporate, vice versa, or stability in work and a whole host of other things that doesn't get included in a study like this, right? Will we be getting this presentation emailed to us? Or
you can if you want. We can.
Yeah, I'd like to have that. And then a couple of board meetings ago, we were looking at something regarding the employee benefits and how like you can carry over unlimited amounts of vacation days and sick days and stuff like that. Will there be a chance to make some changes to that come October, or will we be doing that sooner? Or
that's under our employee handbook,
yeah.
And that normally comes to the board for their passing. We normally bring it, I think, in December or in January. Mm-hmm. It's always effective January of the current year that we go through.
This wasn't looked at as part of this.
Correct.
Silverstone.
No, this is simply compensation.
Does Silverstone and someone else do look at benefits? Do they do a benefits analysis?
We do. Silverstone Group does do benefits benchmarking, yes. And we also do.
We haven't had them do that.
And we also do PTO benchmarking and things of that nature as necessary.
Professor John Conley's next, second, last chance, John.
That's all I was imagining. I would like to see when you come back to us, I'd like to see a graph or some statistics on the number of people and their tenure in their position by pay grade. Not by name, but just how many, what is the average, what is the max tenure in each labor grade, if that's readily available.
Sure.
Thank you.
Director Fred Conley, your last shot.
Well, I was remembering, haven't we had changes to the benefit package?
Yeah, there's been the discussion on the sick leave buyback and things like that. And I remember Director Lay's question was on the 50 carrying 53 days over vacation, and the concern was that, you know, somebody could just use up all the vacation before they quit. We do have a policy that I have to approve all vacation. So if they give me their 2-week notice or their month notice, I obviously won't approve their vacation time to take all that time off instead of. Instead of sitting on the book. So we have policies to correct that. But again, if it's something that you think that's too many, that's another discussion. So,
but when was the last time we made changes?
Probably 6-7 years ago.
Yeah, when we looked at the sick leave policy.
6-7 years
ago. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe 8.
Any other address or comments? Hearing none. Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you.
Appreciate your presentation. Moving on to item E, USGS 2016 Groundwater Quality Monitoring Presentation. Amanda Flynn and with the USGS and Paul Woodward. Good evening.
Hello.
Welcome.
Good evening. We'll try to be as stimulating as the other presentations here. We're going to go over the results of the groundwater sampling and testing that occurred last year. So Amanda's going to start in on that.
I'm Amanda Flynn. I'm with a physical scientist with the USGS and the project manager of this project. And just a quick overview of what we're going to discuss. I'll give a really brief background on the project. And then we'll go into the sites that we sampled this past year and the plans for the upcoming year. USGS has been in a cooperative agreement to collect water quality samples for the NRD since 1992. We started off by focusing on determining the basic water chemistry throughout the district. And then in about 2010, we shifted focus from basic chemistry to focusing on trends for Title 118 analytes. And Title 118 is similar to the EPA regulatory contaminants. And then we also monitor additional nutrients and pesticides. There are 4 main aquifers within the district, and I'm going to discuss the actual aquifers on the next slide. But we sampled 2 different types of wells as part of the sampling. First, we sampled the network wells, and those are privately owned wells throughout the district, so they're domestic irrigation, stock, or those types of wells. For the most part, we focus on domestics right now. And we focus on a single aquifer each year. So this year we focused on the upland alluvial aquifer. And then we also sample monitoring well clusters, and those are dedicated monitoring wells owned by the NRD. There are 2 or 3 wells in each set, and they're screened in differing elevations within the aquifer. And these monitoring well clusters, they're sampled once every 2 years or even more frequently depending on the location of the well and what we're looking for in that certain area or what we're monitoring in that area. So let's see if I can do the pointer. All right, we're good. Okay, so we have the Missouri alluvial, which is along the Missouri River, the Platte-Elkhorn alluvial, which is down along the Platte and Elkhorn Rivers, and then in this kind of grayish blue is the upland, which is what we focused on this year. The upland is discontinuous throughout the area, so it's little pockets of different aquifers in the glacial till of this specific area. And then at depth, you can't really see it very well on this graphic. I didn't do a good job. But at depth is the Dakota sandstone, and then these kind of yellowish areas are areas where our younger sediments have eroded away, so the bedrock aquifers are closer to the surface. So again, we're focusing on the upland this time. For 2016, we were focusing on the upland. We sampled 60 sites over the entire year, 23 upland sites, so those are about 23 domestic wells, a couple municipal wells, and then one cluster well that was screened within the upland upland sediments. And we also collected a sample at a single Platte alluvial site. We had collected a sample for that one the previous year, and the results came back a little bit odd. Not odd, but they weren't in line with what we had seen previously. So we wanted to resample and see if we had detected something different. And I'll discuss those results as we get further on. We also collected a bunch of samples at our monitoring well clusters. We collect samples at Venice, Springfield, and Takama yearly. And then the NRD was also able to install a bunch of new clusters in Jackson, Winnebago, Decatur, Arlington, within the city of Springfield, and then also in southwest Sarpy County. We collect samples at those twice a year until we have a good handle on what the groundwater chemistry is in the area. And then as part of another sampling plan, we also collected samples at Walt Hill and Boyer Chute.
I'll add real quick to that one. The monitoring wells we were able to install bring us up to 11 of 17 communities that have wellhead protection areas where we'd have a well set up in their wellhead protection area to make sure we're collecting water quality for their municipal, so they know ahead of time if something's awry. And then those specific monitoring wells are what we're working with DEQ on, that they would be, that's why we're sampling them at least every 2 years, is this is something that's going to be the baseline information provided to DEQ.
So this graphic shows all the sites that were sampled in 2016. The squares are monitoring well clusters, so there's at least two wells that were sampled at each of the sites that are a square. And then the triangles are the network wells, so those are the privately owned wells. We collected samples for major ions, trace elements, and nutrients, and then 9 of the samples we collected were also analyzed for in-depth pesticides, so atrazine, metolachlor, propazine, simazine, and about 20 other degradants. Okay, so going on now, we're going to be looking at specific results for specific analytes. And all of the color schemes are going to stay the same. So if it's an open box or open triangle, that means there was no detection of the specific analyte. If it's green, it was detected, but it was less than half of the maximum contaminant level. If it's yellow, it was greater than half of the maximum contaminant level, but less than the contaminant level in general. And if it's red, it was above the maximum contaminant level. So for our nitrates, we ranged from non-detections all the way up to 20 milligrams per liter. And one single well cluster we want to point out is our Springfield monitoring well cluster. This was installed in 1999 and has shown elevated nitrates, in the shallow and the deep wells of this aquifer system since it was installed. It doesn't show elevated nitrates in the shallow. It shows elevated in the deep and the medium, but it does not show elevated in the shallow because of denitrification in the shallow part, depths of the aquifer.
And then just to take these results and then show you a little bit about how we work this with our new AEM data so that you can see it in more of a 3D manner. We were able to line along here. Think of a line going basically north and south near Springfield, Nebraska, from the Platte River to Springfield. These are these two up in the uplands, so you can see where the well would be drilled down to. These both occur in the Dakota sandstone. And we are getting, so the color scheme here has tried to stay the same as Amanda, but so yellow would be more than half of the contaminant level, so above 5. And then these other two, this is actually a well we installed in the City of Springfield's wellhead protection area, these two at depth. So there's two at different depths, and they're both below 5. Moving down to the south, then this occurs about where Turtle Creek comes into Springfield Creek here. This is a well just in the alluvium, and none of these were, that one is still below 5. But you get over here to the, again, this is the graph she was just showing. So where there's three wells at that one site, the lowest one for this year didn't show anything above 5, but the two at medium and shallow depth did show nitrates coming in between 5 and 10 parts per million. So I just wanted to give you a visual of how we can use the new AEM data we have to better get a better understanding of the water quality results we're getting each year.
Okay, so this is just highlighting the areas we were at high nitrate detections. Three of our network wells, so three of the privately owned wells, had high nitrate detections above 10 milligrams per liter. And then this monitoring well cluster is the Tecamo well cluster, and that has shown high nitrates in the shallow and the medium depth wells, basically since it was installed in the shallow well. So this is the graph for the Tecamo cluster. So the shallow has always been above 10 milligrams per liter, and the medium bounces between the two. Arsenic is naturally occurring within the system, and it ranges from non-detects up to, I think our Walt Hill nest was at 9.9 micrograms per liter, so not above the MCL, but in the zone between 50% and 100%. Iron and manganese are the next two I'm going to discuss, and iron and manganese are not regulated for health reasons, but they're regulated for aesthetic purposes. Though, if you drink water with high iron or high manganese, it's staining and it doesn't taste that great, kind of gritty. Since most of the water in these aquifers is very old, so it had a long chance to absorb a lot of the minerals around it. So you have high iron across the district and also high manganese across the district. However, there are some sites where the manganese is more than 10 times greater than the maximum contaminant level. And when you get to those types of levels, then there's concern about some impact on human health. There are some studies where they talk about potential intellectual delays in young children when you have high manganese in your water. However, the other side of that is the water tastes awful, so these people likely have filters and everything to clean it out of their water. Uranium is also naturally occurring across the district in low concentrations. There's one area in one of the new cluster wells down in southwest Sarpy County where it's elevated, and then in the Venice shallow nest, it is above the MCL. It has been above 10 micrograms per liter since 2009. And this has to do with drying and wetting of the sediments in the area. It's very close to the MED well field, and so due to pumping, the iron's being mobilized through the soil. However, this is happening only at the shallow well, and there are no domestic wells close by, and MED is pumping from the bottom of the aquifer, so it's not a concern to human consumption. As I said before, we sent in pesticides for 9 different wells, and we only had results or detections at one well down in the Platte Alluvial. And they were very, very minor detections. They weren't anywhere close to a maximum contaminant level, but they were being detected. There were 3 actual herbicides that were detected and then 2 degradants. Going on for this year's sampling, we're going to be focusing on the Dakota Aquifer. We're going to be sampling 25 sites specifically screened in the Dakota, including the Tecama and Homer well clusters. And then we'll also be doing sampling at all the different monitoring wells that are up in the rotation.
Okay, I just wanted to remind the board real quick about how we're using this information now that we're moving into having a groundwater management plan with different phases. This is what I presented before where we analyzed each of the main reservoirs, and if you just look at those, they're not quite reaching the level where you would actually say that entire aquifer area needs to be moved into a different phase, because it's not... If 50% of these different samples over the years came back higher than the limits we've set, then you would do that. This is actually just showing nitrate. However, when we did break down a couple of those areas, you've heard about the Takema cluster for a while, and then actually, in addition to that trend we saw in the alluvial aquifer south of Springfield along the Platte, we did a lot more testing a few years ago, and that a number of those results came in above 5. So we feel that we're at a point with both of those areas where we would move them into a phase 2 water quality once we get our plan and our rules enacted. So this is what the phase 2 area looks like for Takema. It's basically just mostly the wellhead protection area, or the sections including the wellhead protection area. And then in the south of Springfield area, in the Platte River alluvial aquifer, it's everything. This would be Papillion's wellhead protection area, but their wells occur over here. And this would be Springfield's wellhead protection area. So we're encompassing an area there that we would hope to basically work on actions that start to reduce nitrate levels and help the groundwater. So with that, I'll let Amanda conclude.
That's all I have for the 2016 and 17 sampling. All of our resorts our reports are available online. We're currently redoing our website. So it doesn't look as fun as it used to, but we'll get to it soon. And then we do report all this information to the agrochemical contaminant database for UNL, which is then given as a legislative report to the state every February or March. And I just want to say, if there are any questions at all, I go through this very quick. Please don't hesitate to email or call. So.
You've thrown a lot of good information at us tonight. Pretty overwhelming. Are there any questions, Mr. Bradley?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was looking at, can you go back to the slide of the high manganese? And is that Thurston County up there?
Yes, and that is, since that's a square, that is one of our monitoring well clusters. I believe that's our new one near Winnebago.
And you were saying they probably have filters for their water and so forth. I don't know exactly about Thurston County, but, I do in a sense. Very poor, and I'm not stereotyping anybody. You know, my stepdad is full-blood Ogallala Lakota from Pine Ridge, 80% unemployment, so forth. And I don't know if they may have filters for their water like other folks, so is anybody checking with the health and welfare of that, you know, water through different agencies, state, federal, because we don't want a Flint, Michigan type deal. So.
Right. I would think we do. I mean, all this is available publicly, and so I would hope that the tribes are able to get the information that way. Mm-hmm. And I would be more than happy to send the specific information to the tribes for the wells that are in their area.
Oh, please do. You know, even if they get it once, twice, or thrice, please do send that to them.
That particular well was actually drilled in the Winnebago's wellhead protection area as one of the wells we just put in, like she's saying. So they do have, you know, a water treatment system and a system that goes out to a lot of a pretty big, not just town, but outside of town has like a little rural water system kind of thing that the tribe has. But I wouldn't say I wouldn't deem that everybody doesn't have a domestic well. Lowell, our employee, lives right there, and he has a private well.
Okay. Well, then, I don't want to get too off base here. I know for time, but it was Thurston County tribal officials. They were lobbying for the Senator Priester and so forth to have a minority populations representative on the EQC, and I was the first one. And part of the things there was farmers or somebody, not all farmers, there's one or two bad apples that were dumping chemicals, so forth, unused chemicals on the county roads and into the ditches and so forth. But I was wanting to go to the one in Takema. There was highlighting a troubled spot around Takema, or maybe alarming. And is that near that lake just outside of Takema? And so I was wondering how many people.
This specific well in Takema is actually within the town cemetery. Okay. But we also have seen elevated nitrates, not as high as this, but elevated in some of the municipal wells, and Takema is aware of that, and they switch their wells in order to make sure that they're
in that general area. I was wondering about the lake outside there, people, you know, eating the fish and X amount of, you know, fish tissue, and if that would, I'm sure. But see, I was on the EQC, and I'm not, you know, don't want to badmouth, but they just, you know, sometimes they were toothless and almost too on purpose. And so you have to wonder if that's being reported on the Nebraska Game and Parks, where they're showing how much, you know, pollution and how much allowing a percent of fish you should eat out of that body of water per week. So we didn't know if you had any idea on that.
Well, Summit Lake would be approximately 4.5 miles from this sampling site, and I guess we don't know the relationship of the lake to the groundwater enough to say whether there would be cross issues between the two.
I only deal with groundwater. I'm apparently too clumsy to work with groundwater.
So. No, I hypothesize that it very well could be, though.
Yes.
Thank you.
Larry, the Game and Parks does test the all our water, lake waters, and they do put out advisories as necessary, and, you know, for fish, and sometimes limit the number of fish you eat out of a particular given river or lake. Depending on what contaminants may or may not be found. Is there any other questions? The rest is out.
I had one quick question, Amanda. Based on your professional experience and expertise and so forth, what, if anything, concerns you the most regarding all this information and data?
Concerning the upland aquifer in general, just the fact that it's not as well mapped as it could be, and the fact that they're all just little reservoirs upon themselves. And so I know the NRDS plans to do more AEM flights in the area, which would help out in determining quality in more specified areas. So.
It'll give you a lot more detailed information and you'd feel, okay.
Yeah, there could be things we're not even sampling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you very much. Appreciate your work. Moving on to subcommittee reports, FBL subcommittee, Director Rich Teason. Okay. Be it resolved, the minutes of the May 9, 2017 meeting of the FBL subcommittee are hereby accepted and incorporated into these minutes, and the following recommendations of the subcommittee are hereby adopted and approved. Number one, extension of service agreements with Hush Blackwell. A, legal service agreement, recommendation that the board approve the proposed legal services agreement with Hush Blackwell for the terms and conditions outlined in said agreement for a one-year period to begin upon execution of the agreed agreement from July 1, 2017 to June 30, 2018, subject to changes deemed necessary by the GM. And I so move.
You don't need a second.
Put your chairman hat on now.
And now you're the chairman. Any discussions? You need a vote. But you need to ask for any discussion first.
Yeah, okay. Well,
or anybody from the
vote. Yeah. Are there any comments from the general public? Directors? Hearing none, roll call.
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
Lady.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Peace.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
And Sheriff.
Yes. Item B, Government Relations Service Agreement, recommendation that the GM be authorized to execute a proposed contract for a two-year period from July 1, 2017 to June 30, 2019 for Hush Blackwell for the provisions of intergovernmental and professional lobbying services. Further terms and conditions outlined in the attached agreement as to form with any changes deemed necessary by the GM. And I so moved. Anybody from the general public wish to comment? Directors. Roll call.
Yeah.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Keith.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Brunwald.
No.
Hampshire.
Yes. Item 2, accounts over 110% General attorney fees, 0101000 4392. Recommendation that the account 0101000 4392. General administrative legal fees be allowed to exceed 110% of the budget amount for a maximum not to exceed amount of $160,000 without further board approval. And I so move. Any comments from the general public? Directors. Roll call.
Leahy.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Sweet.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Glenn Wall.
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Shepard.
Yes.
Let's real quick. Director Leahy, you had a question about adding Baird Home onto yes. Paul Peters. It varied from 11, it was $465 to fiscal year 12 was almost $15,000, and then fiscal year was $9,000. That was in addition to Paul Peters'. All
right. Thank you.
Yep.
Item 3, accounts over 110%, office equipment, 0101004804. Recommendation that that account I just named, office equipment, be allowed to exceed 110% of the budget amount with a maximum not to exceed amount of $85,000 without further board approval, and I so move. Any comments from the general public? Directors. Roll call.
Thompson.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Glenn Wall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Answer.
Yes. Item 4, Zerinsky Basin number 2, land acquisition, recommendation that the GM be authorized to execute a purchase agreement with Jennifer and William Pusbichel for the purchase of 28.074 acres for purchase price of $1,538,736 and a purchase agreement with the Backus Family Limited Partnership for the purchase of approximately 19.4 acres to be verified by survey for $54,810 per acre, both for the construction of Zerinsky Water Quality Basin 2 project, subject to terms and conditions deemed necessary by the GM and approved according by District Legal Counsel, and I so move. Any comments from the general public? Directors, roll call.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Brenwald.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
And?
Yes. And that concludes my report. Oh. Agenda item 9B, Ad-Hoc Consultant Selection Committee for Pavilion Creek, the Regional Detention Basin, Director Teaser. Be it resolved at the minutes of the May 9, 2017 meeting of the Ad-Hoc Consultant Selection Committee for the Papillion Creek Watershed Regional Detention Basin are hereby accepted and incorporated in these minutes, and the following recommendations of the subcommittee are hereby adopted and approved. 1. Fire Engineering WP2 Project. Recommendation that the GM be authorized to execute professional service agreement with Fire Engineering for preliminary design of WP2 Project in the amount not to exceed $593,239, subject to changes deemed necessary by the GM and approved or formed by District Legal Counsel, and I so move. Any comments from the general public? Directors. Director Zach.
Thank you, Director Teaser. I just want to again go on record just to express my concern about the potential costs of these projects. I think the actual cost that the engineering firms presented was probably within line, but I'm again just concerned about the land acquisition costs and the weight that it would put on a financial strain that it might put on this district. I'll probably go ahead and vote for this at this point, but I am deeply concerned about the overriding cost of all this, doing this many projects at one time.
And duly noted, sir.
I would
thank
like
you
to have somebody explain that very carefully how we're going to pay for this.
We have a schedule, and so we will present that during budget time. So
we've
thoroughly thought it out.
Uh-huh.
And it's being adjusted weekly.
Okay.
One thing about this does not commit us to buy any land, and one of the main reasons to do this level of engineering on these is so we know we know what land we need to buy. And so as we get inquiries from developers and development that they are ready to, you know, to sell, they're ready to do a subdivision, then it gives us the opportunity to give the board the opportunity to, do we buy it or do we pass? And so that, but we have to have this basic information first. All right. Thank you.
Anybody else? Hearing that, roll call.
Bradley.
Yes.
Greg Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Ren Wolf.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leahy.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Lee.
Yes.
Yes. Item 2, ACR Engineering, Inc., WP4, DS12, DS19 projects. Recommendation that the GM be authorized to execute a professional service agreement with ACR Engineering for preliminary design of WP4, DS19, DS12 projects in amount not to exceed $2,043,823, subject to changes deemed necessary by the GM and approved in form by legal counsel. And I shall move. Is there any comment from the general public? Directors. Roll call.
Greg Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Ren Wolf.
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Keith.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Chairperson.
Yes. Item 3, Olson Associates, WP1, DS7 projects. Recommendation that the GM be authorized to execute professional service agreement with Olson Associates for preliminary design of WP1 DS7 projects in amount not to exceed $1,219,255, subject to changes deemed necessary by the GM and approved in form by legal counsel. I so move. Any comments from the general public? Directors? Seeing none, roll call.
John Conley.
Yes.
Brian Wolf.
No.
Jeff.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Brad
Conley. Aye. Yes. That concludes my report. I'm going to go on vacation. John, take over. The rest of town.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Be it resolved that the minutes of the May 9th, 2017 meeting of the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee are accepted, incorporated in these minutes, and the following recommendations of the subcommittee are hereby adopted and approved. Item 1, Eastern Nebraska Water Resource Assessment Amendment and UNL Conservation Survey Division Cooperative Agreement. Item A is the NRA Interlocal Agreement Amendment Number 5. The subcommittee recommends that the general manager be authorized to execute Amendment 5 to the Eastern Nebraska Water Resources Assessment Interlocal Cooperative Agreement with 5 other natural resource districts to extend the term of the agreement to 2022. Subject to changes deemed necessary by the GM and approved as to form by district legal counsel, and I so move.
Anybody from the general public wish to make comment? Directors? Roll call.
Ren Wolf.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Lee.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Greg Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Yes.
Part B of this is a recommendation that the general manager be authorized to execute a cooperative agreement with the University of Nebraska-Lincoln Conservation Survey Division to complete geological test holes in the Missouri River Valley for a cost to the district not to exceed $78,100, subject to changes deemed necessary by the GM and approval as to form by district legal counsel, and I so move.
Any comments or from the general public? Directors? Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Greg Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Ren Wolf.
Yes.
Andrew.
Yes.
The next item is bids received for Platte River Landing Phase 5. Subcommittee recommends that the GM be authorized to execute a contract with Dostal Construction Company for the construction of the Platte River Landing Recreation Improvements Phase 5 with alternates for the bid amount of $130,000, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approvals to form by district legal counsel, and I so move.
Any comments from the general public? Directors? Roll call.
Leahy.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Weeks.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Brian Wolf.
Yes.
Jeff.
Yes.
Yes.
Item 3 is the FY 2018 equipment requirements. Subcommittee recommends that the directors approve the FY 2018 equipment requirements as presented to the subcommittee, subject to funding in the FY 2018 budget, and I so move.
Comments from the general public? Directors? Roll call.
Thompson.
Yes.
Weed.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
Yes.
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 Item 4. Subcommittee recommends that the general manager be authorized to execute the 2017 amended interlocal agreement for the Lower Platte River Corridor Alliance, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approval as to form by district legal counsel, and that the chairman be authorized to appoint the district's two representatives to the Alliance Board, and I so move.
Comments from the general public? Directors?
I had a question.
Let's go here first.
I'm sorry.
Bradley?
You got to be quick.
Buzzing quick.
Buzzing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, for the two representatives, you just solicit names of interest and then maybe, you know, pick out of those? Or
the chairman would appoint. So if you have an interest, I'd tell the chairman you have an interest to serve.
Okay.
If it survives. So.
Okay.
We'll have to see how the vote is.
Understood.
In June.
I detected a lack of enthusiasm for this by our most closely aligned people to this alliance. And I'm just kind of curious, does this alliance have any permanent employees or just farmed out to whoever is available from our office or what?
It used to have a full-time director, and it does not now.
Who actually does the administrative work?
Right now, it's the assistant general manager for the Lower Platte South, which the alliance is housed in their NRD. And so they conduct the administrative work of all the alliance members.
And you've been on this alliance for quite some time, and yeah. you think it's a worthwhile project, or is this something that we can do without? And then, I mean, wouldn't a few phone calls just kind of suffice if there's some issue that came up and you had to meet for something, or have to contribute $25,000 a year for this?
Yes, I understand. I live on the Platte River, and I have a deep love for it. I can see the benefit. The original alliance was basically keep the federal government out of our hair. It went beyond, it just through, you know, hey, let's do this, let's do that. It started growing and growing and growing. The bills started going up, and I had some heartache over it, quite frankly. John has worked very hard on this, it's talking to the three NRDs and trying to get this thing a little more manageable, downsize it, and eliminate some of the, what I call the frills. If it survives, and it's, like John said, it's a three-legged stool. If one leg's, we're done. Mm-hmm. If one leg goes. And I could go either way on. And that's just, you know, I'm sorry, but that's just the way I feel. However, I'm happy to serve on it, and I think I bring a lot to it, but just because I'm so familiar with the river. But we'll just have to see where it goes.
So this agreement before you is trying to bring it back home, or to its original form.
Director Leahy.
Obviously, I haven't been as familiar with it as Rich has, but you know, if it what its intended purposes was to keep the federal government out of the Lower Platte, well, it sort of did that, so it accomplished that. But that being said, the federal government was going to give $10 million, according to John's sitting.
$21
million, which is funny because we're like, keep the government out. Then they have $21 million, we're like, come on, federal government, you know, like, come on in, we'll open our doors for that. But that's not a failure of the Lower Platte River Corridor Alliance directly not to get that money. I mean, that's a failure of federal, our elected federal officials to, and unelected federal officials bureaucrats to release that money or appropriate it. And some of the mission creep hasn't been all bad. They've done some good things that they maybe weren't necessarily designed to. That being said, I do remember sometimes they were talking about studying how the Platte River sandbars change over time, and that's like great, but who's going to use that and why for the amount of money that's going to cost? So it's just a matter of trying to, I think, rein it in. But is it a good thing? On the whole, I would say yes. And if you want to get that $21 million, maybe it's a pipe dream, but sometime I think you're going to need that lower Platte corridor alliance still intact.
And we didn't participate in the sandbar study.
Okay.
All of the data's available.
Good to know.
Actually, I would concur with your comment. Director Thompson.
Yeah. Director Tease is correct as well as far as where the alliance had gone to. It's been around for 15, 16 years.
Yeah.
And what happened with the one full-time employee, Megan Sittler, before her a couple of years, she didn't have a boss. She didn't really. She is very independent. We contribute to finance her. Lower Platte South put her in whatever space they had. She wasn't paying rent or anything because all she did was get salary dollars and put together grants requests for the benefit of all three NRDs. I'm very comfortable with how this has evolved because the concerns about, you know, what is this one person doing for the benefit of all? There are some frills I think got away. I think this contract now, the document I should say, put some of that, like we want further direction. There are power numbers when you submit a grant for three NRDs or just two, and the way this agreement is now, the third NRD doesn't have to participate in project money. They'll still support salary-wise. The alternative to that, now look at Marlon and the other staff members, if we're going to do the project, we have to do it with existing staff, coordinating with the existing staff, Lower Platte South or Lower Platte North, or a combination of all three. Do we have the time to do that? It's other duties as assigned, you know, and the workload continues to increase. So in a way, we're paying for that manpower to do the work that otherwise would be absorbed by the busy staff we currently have available. So you were going to, if this survives, like John said, we'll be contributing really a smaller amount than probably what a full-time staff. And I suspect this may even become a part-time position now. It remains to be seen. I don't know what, and there's some things that might go away, and that's fine. But I think with the more concentration on what the duties are of the coordinator. What's the tenure on this? 3 years? 1 year.
The agreement?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's three? Marlon, it's like five. Or is it just continuous? Yeah, it doesn't, yeah.
Okay.
Agreement.
All right.
But every year you have to have the three NRDs participate. So if 1 year, say we're in this 2 years and somebody decides no, it's done then. That's the rub. Everybody has to kick in the three NRDs.
Has the person been successful in grants? I'm sorry, I thought you were doing it. Has there been success in getting grants?
Megan did a good job in getting grants. And you know, she would come back to when we'd go back to DC to do our delegation meetings and stuff, and she was actually quite an integral part of getting that authorization in the WERDA. So it is a team effort, but it helps to have somebody coordinating it.
Any further comments from the directors? Hearing none, roll call.
Please.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Brett.
John Thompson. Yes. Brenwell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes.
The Treasurer's report consists of the resolutions on the board and the approval specifically of items 10A through 10I inclusive, and I move their approval.
Second. Any comment from the general public? Directors? Roll call.
Bradley.
Yes.
Brett Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Glenn Wall.
Yes.
Jeff.
Yes.
Heidi.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Venture.
Yes.
That concludes that report.
Legal update. Brent, sorry.
There's no legal update.
There is none. That's okay. That's good. I like that. Item 12, chairperson's report, review and recommendation of the waive district policy 2.3E, director's compensation expenses, direct deposit for Director Grunwald.
There's been a Director Grunwald made a request that that we waive the policy regarding direct deposit of and the completion of the W-4 for withholdings on the per diem that directors get. So I have talked to Steve Graz on several occasions, our legal counsel, to determine what the legal ramifications are and if that's possible. And just to remind the board members, I could not have done that myself. I could not have granted a waiver of policy without your approval. And so that's why I included everyone in the conversation and everyone in the discussion that went back and forth, because it's ultimately your decision. I just don't have that authority to do that. And one thing about policy is it's blind. So we revert to policy because policy treats everyone the same. So if it was the same question from Director Bradley or Director Thompson or anybody, my response would have been the same. This is the policy that the board has established for some reason. And it's either a legal reason, or it's an operational reason, or it's the best method of practice reason, but that's why policy is established. I do not have the authority to violate that policy, nor do I have the authority to ignore state and federal rules and regs. So that's why this is before you, because you as a board have to make that determination to, one, either waive the policy, or two, change the policy. And so Steve Graz has reviewed the state statutes and the IRS rules and regulations, which there may be questions, and he has prepared a legal memo for everyone to review, and he will give you his opinion. And so that has been my role and will continue to be my role anytime that there is a question of policy or a request for a policy to be waived. Mr. Graz.
I just got a question to get it on the record about what exactly are we being asked to review and approve. I mean, what is Director Grunwald's
request? I would defer to him to
get it on the record.
Director Grunwald, did you go
ahead? I'll just read my statement.
Go ahead. Just
Okay. To begin with, please be aware that I did not intend to involve fellow board members into the simple request for receiving paper checks for my PAPU NRD payments. The money's owed or not in dispute. It's simply a method of payment. I received constant pressure from staff and other board members to fill out a W-4 form and a direct deposit form. I would like to address both of these issues at this time. Regarding the direct deposit form, filling out a direct deposit form is not an option for me, as I do not have an account available for direct depositing these monies owed. I maintain a policy to not share confidential information, such as my bank account. In today's environment, one can never be too safe. The best strategy is to hold tightly onto one's personal confidential information. As such, it is my policy to hold tightly to this information. Therefore, my simple request is to be paid with a paper check made available at the monthly meetings. This request should not be an excessive burden to staff. Regarding the W-4 form, it is my understanding the purpose of a W-4 form is to provide an employer the information to properly withhold federal income taxes from wages paid an employee. Therefore, since I do not believe an employee-employer relationship exists between myself and an elected official and the PAPU NRD, I am not an employee, nor do I receive a salary as an employee. In a recent email, State Statute 2-3218 with the heading of Members of Boards, Compensation expenses was cited. In reading this statute, it defines the amount to be paid, not the classification of the payment or how the payment is made.
I believe I should be classified as an independent contractor. Therefore, I should not receive employee wages. Under the common law control rules used by IRS and courts to distinguish between employees and independent contractors, I am an independent contractor and thus should be paid as an independent contractor. Now, I'm not skirting taxes. I will settle my tax debts with the IRS. This is not rocket science. Where's the common sense? Just write a check. I have legitimate and easily understood reasons for my position. Now, John Winkler, I have submitted expenses for around $240. I understand it could be $140, as we discussed through this memo or information I received. Please make this available at the Thursday's morning. Thank you for your time. And to cut another thing, I have talked to professional people about my position. So, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Steve, would you be nice enough to respond to?
Sure. There's really two issues, although they are interrelated. One is the direct deposit request, and one is the completion of the W-4 form. The issue that's addressed by the legal memorandum that you have is whether NRD board members are subject to federal tax withholding requirements, and that pertains to the W-4. I won't go through all this, but I think it's important just to give you the background and then the high points and the conclusion. Members of Natural Resources District Boards are elected officials. That's pretty obvious. Unlike some elected officials, their duties are not full-time. They do work independently rather than being subject to direction from others. Now, under normal circumstances, that's an indication of an independent contractor or something else. In many ways, they do not meet the commonly understood criteria for being an employee. So consequently, the question has been raised as to whether and why NRD board members must complete a W-4 form, and whether they are subject to withholding of Social Security and income taxes. The first point covered is that NRD board members do receive taxable compensation. Under Nebraska Revised Statute 2-3218, the per diem payments to board members are not, they're separate and apart from reimbursement of expenses. It's clear under the statute that per diem payments to directors are compensation and not expense reimbursement for tax purposes. And the second point is the most important here. And quite simply, the IRS treats elected government officials as employees for tax purposes. According to published IRS guidelines, which you have attached there, regarding tax withholding for government workers, they state that Internal Revenue Code Section 3401C indicates that an officer, employee, or elected official of government is an employee for income tax withholding purposes. The guidelines further state that, quote, therefore, the government entity is responsible for withholding and paying federal income tax, Social Security tax, and Medicare tax. So in conclusion, although NRD directors are elected officials, they are treated as employees for purposes of federal tax withholding. Consequently, it is necessary under federal law that the NRD obtain a completed W-4 form from directors and withhold applicable federal taxes. And the consequences to the district, if you don't do that, can be quite serious in terms of failing to comply with federal tax laws and the liability that would attach to that.
Mr. Graz has also contacted the Social Security Administrator. I said in a previous email for the state of Nebraska, who concurs with legal counsel's review, as well as our auditing firm. Has also concurred and has had those instructions prior that we, in fact, follow that.
There was also a memo from another Natural Resources District that goes back quite a number of years, like 27 years ago, I think, where the same issue was researched and came to the same conclusion.
Well, Director Grunwald, it appears that your request, according to legal counsel, would not be appropriate. And if you care to make a motion, we'll hear it.
My motion is pay me my money.
Could you be a little more thorough in?
You owe me money, pay me my money.
Well, I think we're willing, the district is willing to pay you, but we want to do it by direct deposit.
It's not an option.
Well,
the direct deposit issue is separate from the W-4 issue. If the board so chooses to waive that part of the policy, you can do that. There's no statutory requirement that you have to do direct deposit. However, there is federal law and state law and the policy that indicates a W-4 must be completed in order to withhold those proper taxes, and then we can pay Director Grunwald. The penalty is if we do not withhold those and somehow those do not get paid, then the district is on the hook for those taxes as well as 100% penalty. Now, I'm not saying he's not going to pay them, but we have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that we not only are following the rules and the regs, but that also we don't put the district in jeopardy of violating any federal law or state law or local law, and that those taxes do in fact get paid. And so that is the question on the W-4, the direct deposit, that there's no requirement, that's just our policy, and if you so choose, you could waive that and issue a paper check.
Director Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering, does the Happy Missouri NRD follow, or do they have to require e-verify for any employees?
We do e-verify with new employees.
Okay, and so I just wondering, because we probably beholden to the federal government. I know state laws are one thing, but the federal law trumps the state law, and that's, you know, just my thought on it. And I was also thinking, though, there's rules there that a pauper can sign up or go, you know, try out for an election. And if you filed as a pauper and you didn't, you know, don't have any bank account or so forth, that would be one thing. But I don't, if you didn't file as a pauper, then it's too late. You know, that's my opinion, but I don't know if that's something that legal counsel...
Yeah, I think those are really two separate issues, though.
Okay. Director Leahy.
Yeah, well, I was going to make a motion to waive the requirements of the direct deposit to pay the directors or any other employee that just wants to be paid in check, that we... try to be able to do that. So that's my motion. Just the waiving the direct deposit for a check for directors and employees.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Do we have comments from the general public? Come forth, please, and state your name and address.
Good evening, directors. My name is Patrick Bonnet, 5175 South 150th Plaza, Omaha, Nebraska. As a former director for this seat, Subdistrict 9, I closely follow your activities, and I was a little surprised to see this item on the agenda for this evening. In reviewing the issue myself, I just have a couple of questions for the director and for the NRD. And I guess I should speak for the organization, the Old Millard Homeowners Association. Our zone is from L Street to Harry Anderson, 120th Street to Old L. The question I have for tonight is simply, where does this director live? And in looking at his residence history, I looked at his campaign registration documents, and he was living behind the pizza machine, and then changed his residence to just behind about 147th Street. And just tonight I see that he's registered to a 1909 31st Avenue Southwest, apartment 428 in Minot, North Dakota. So I just have that question for this evening. I'd like to, as a constituent of his, ascertain if he lives in the district, and if so, where exactly would that be?
4957 South 149th Court.
4957. And that's in your...
It is in district.
Very good. Thank you. I was quite confused by that registration.
I want to make a comment. Years ago, when we passed this direct deposit in Director Conley over here is going to get angry because I'm repeating myself, but man, it used to be great. Everybody, we used to get a paper check. I got it in the mail. I stashed it away. And about every 3 or 4 months, I'd go out and buy a new shotgun or a new fishing reel. And then we went to direct deposit, and I lost it all. My wife got the check. The direct deposit, my wife got all the money. But,
I've got a question. I'm not a tax lawyer by any means, but now, is there not such a thing as an I-9 and a 1099 that we can do for Director Grunwald, where if you don't do the direct deposit, that you can still write him a check in 1099? All that does is you send the 1099, you mail it out, it gets filed through the IRS, same thing. It gets applied directly to his Social Security number, and the NRD just does it. You're done. The only reason why I do it with a lot of vendors.
It's my understanding that that's not an option here because the federal government treats elected public officials as employees and therefore they have to be withholding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but doesn't the I-9 constitute, doesn't that take the place of that W-4? I believe if you read that I-9.
That's not consistent with the research I did. I could have further into that.
I would check the I-9 because I think if you read that, I think you'll find. The only reason why I know that is because I have to do it with every employee I have, and there are some statutes in there. Just because of what they talk about, people that, and this is why it's there, because there are people that do not have bank accounts. There are people that don't work within the system, and that's why it's in there. It's a discriminatory thing. And it's still by the federal government. I mean, I have to abide by it, so does everybody else. I don't know. I just.
Yeah, I also did talk directly to the state Social Security Administrator in person, and he was pretty clear that the government agency, the elected public official, had to have a W-4 and a 4.
Professor Reese, you actually cut me off. I hadn't finished my comment when I was talking about my paper check. The end of the story is that if I had to live with the direct deposit, I see no reason why you can't. Professor Thompson?
I'm familiar with the 1099. I've received them myself, but there's no guarantee that the taxes that are due or withheld from that 1099. And there is a non-employee-employee relationship with that. As Steve Gross pointed out in his memo, this is a different case. So what I'm not hearing from Director Grunwald is point of Patrick's motion, if we waive the policy to write a check, are you still going to submit a W-4? And you said in writing, no, I'm not. So if you are not going to submit a W-4, it's a two-edged recommendation here. We can't issue a check until you submit the W-4. If you're never going to submit the W-4, then how can we issue a check? I don't understand. You mentioned common sense in your, what is this common sense? Why would we treat you separately? Why would you, as a director of any NRD in the entire state of Nebraska, want to be issued a silly little check for an expense claim? What gives you the stature of, hey, I don't want to let my bank account be known? I think that offends me as a knowing our staff and how they keep everything confidential. You're saying they can't keep it confidential. Everyone in this room, every employee, every NRD in the state of Nebraska, whether you're elected official or employee, gets a direct deposit. I don't see that you're so special that we have to waive our policy to accommodate a contrived statement you made, and it's pretty dang fishy that you finally admitted where you lived. We didn't know where you lived. Staff is wanting to put your address, you never gave it to them. So tonight you gave it to a constituent. Oh, I'm making progress.
But if you can't fill out a simple W-4, why did you run for election? You must have known, if you didn't read our policy online, I want to be an NRD guy. Let's look at the policy. It's a direct deposit. Well, I'll get that changed once I get elected. Well, wrong. It's being discussed now. But if you didn't recognize and read our policy, what you were going to be in as an elected official, should you win the most votes, what do you want us to do? Just change everything? Any policy going along? We spent too much time on this as it is. And by the way, we do have the policy, claims over 60 days are not allowed. So you threw out two numbers here, one 240, another 140. I don't know what that comprises. But if you're saying, gee, I want all my money from the January meeting when you were sworn in, that's beyond 60 days. You haven't submitted a claim for that. And we're not going to waive that policy unless someone brings up a motion. That's why Director Grunwald, that's why the policy of Director Grunwald, he didn't file within 60 days. There's a reason we do that, a very common logical reason. So this is getting way out of hand, and it's not common sense for you to be this contrary.
Director Leahy, second comment.
Sounds much like you get a first comment in before you go back to the night director.
Director Conley was first.
Thank you, Director Conley.
I just challenge this director on his request because he's refused even the option of certified mail. He won't accept mailing from us. There's something going on beyond just deposit here, and I don't think I want to see this board play into his hand in whatever game is being played. I don't know what it is. I don't need to know. We have a good policy. I just encourage you to stick with it, and let's not get involved in anything that come back to bite us and cause our staff extra work.
Thank you, Director Conley. Director Leahy, second comment.
Well, this will be my first because my...
Okay, yeah, I'll get it for
twice. Yes, so I agree with the sort of asinine of this request and the manner that it's come about, but I do think it brings up some good questions. First off, I'd like to know, well, I'm just going to throw out all my questions and Steve or John or Director Goldmore can ask them, answer them in whatever order. But what happens if he doesn't fill out a W-4? I mean, we just hold on to the money until perpetuity, or, I mean, does he, I mean, what were to happen with that? And then I guess when I brought this motion up, it was not just for Director Grunwald, but for all staff, because I can see how some people don't want to mess around with bank accounts. I've heard stories about that. I work in Seattle, Washington, where there's a bunch of weirdos who do stuff like that, but we cut a lot of checks to a lot of organizations that don't accept electronic fund transfers or direct deposits, and Director Conley knows as well as I do, I mean, I think it's like the Blair Enterprise and a whole bunch of others, we have to cut checks to them, so I don't see what the big deal is about not cutting a check to any employee or director. That's the manner they want to go about it, but Director Thompson brings up a good point. If you aren't going to fill out the W-4, it's a moot point because at the end of the day, the W-4 is still needed to even cut a check. But, John, you made it seem like you had something to say when I first brought up the motion.
I would respectfully recommend that this is a separate issue than employees getting the direct deposit. The employees get direct deposit because it's a matter of efficiency and effectiveness for our accounting staff. And I think it's a matter of convenience for the employees as well. So just to let it willy-nilly, I'll take a check. Every state agency, every city government you talk to, the employees are all on direct deposit, and it's just a matter of efficiency and effectiveness of issuing payroll. And so I would respectfully review in the motion to remove employees from that. I've never heard an employee say that I don't want direct deposit. And I know Carrie and Barb, that kind of throws a wrench in their operation to offer that. But this is a separate issue. If you want to issue a check, we do issue lots of checks. But I would rather keep it on task to who has requested it and not open it up to everybody because it just creates an efficiency issue.
I'll amend my motion then to take out employees and just make it directors. I don't know if you need a second for that or...
Friendly
amendment?
Director Weiss, you seconded, are you?
I'll second.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And one comment, and not picking on Director John Conley, but said he didn't want to know, or one thing that's is his prerogative, but I think the constituents of the district that Director Grunwald represents, they may want to know, you know, they voted for him, or they voted for somebody, but to represent them, they want to know their where their representative lives, and that should be public record.
Thank you. Director Grunwald, I'd like to make a comment as acting chair. I was insulted at some of your email comments to Director or to General Manager Winkler, as well as the Executive Committee. I thought they were way out of bounds. They were insulting and the demeaning and completely out of character for a director on this board. That's all I care to say about it. Is there any further comments from the directors?
We have a motion.
We have a motion.
Okay. Do I take a motion to table?
Roll call.
We got to have a second.
No, I didn't hear you.
Yeah, motion to table. Is there a second?
Who made the motion?
Director.
I did.
Oh, you made
a motion.
No second required. Steve, Brent, is there a second on a table? Motion to table?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. What's that?
Second motion.
You'll second? Okay. Roll call.
What are we voting on?
A motion to table. To just end discussion and not take action.
And there's no discussion on a motion.
And there's no discussion on breaking protocol right now.
Well, we're okay.
We have
I thought there was a motion that was seconded.
There was a motion of table.
It supersedes.
Okay.
Robert.
Roll call.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Ron Wall.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Lady.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Me.
No.
Bradley.
Yes.
No.
Five yay.
Thank you. General, do you have anything?
I do, real quickly. It's getting
fine in the evening.
The information education reports attached for your review for April 17 attaches a memorandum discussing the purchase of a new tree planter that will replace the district's current, well, now past unit that has determined beyond repair and a safety hazard. Also, there's a report on purchases, construction services, professional services, and personal property, as well as the report on the current and ongoing project with the district legal counsel. The partnership meeting for April was canceled, and the next meeting is scheduled for May 25th, 2017. Also, the NRD was awarded a grant in the amount of $24,500 from the Nebraska Department of Environmental Quality for litter reduction and recycling program. The NRD organized and completed 4 e-waste recycling collections last month. The collections were held on April 4th in Tecama, and the Blairfield office is on April 6th at Dakota City and Wolf Hill. And all types of electronic waste was accepted, including televisions, computer monitors, microwaves, audiovisual equipment, office equipment, so other small devices. A total of 60,040 pounds of e-waste was received during these collections. 366 vehicles brought in material from 448 households and 91 businesses. I'd like to thank Director Japp. He participated in 3 of those events, and also our staff and employees that volunteered to do that, as well as the Nebraska Los Hills RC&D Council directors and employees from City of Blair, Cargill, and Keep Nebraska Beautiful. There was about 12 to 18 on site to assist. We also got notified today that the NRD received a DEQ grant for $41,520 to hold a tire recycling event on August 11th at the fairgrounds in Arlington. So we'll send out some more information on that. I'm currently in the process of interviewing Emmett Eggers' replacement. I had 10 interviews this week, and I've narrowed it down to 4. We will have those next interviews in the next week or so. The next process will be Marlin, myself, and Gene Tate will interview those four finalists and hopefully have a selection by the end of the month. Very, very qualified applicants. I think I've learned just as much from talking to them as hopefully they learned from us. So that concludes my report.
Thank you. Item 14, informational items, future meetings, May 16th, Lower Platte River Consortium Workshop, 8:30 noon, Lower Platte South NRD, May 25th, Lower Platte Corridor Alliance meeting, 9 a.m. at Lower Platte South. May 25th, Batavian Creek Watershed Partnership meeting at 10 o'clock here. May 29th, Memorial Day, Pathfield offices will be closed. June 6th, NRD subcommittee meetings. And June 8th will be the board meeting. Next meeting, again, June 8th. We stand adjourned.